It's one of those mornings when you are the guinea pigs. I usually say the shiur first on Monday morning in the Rova, so I get to know what it is that I really want to say. For all sorts of reasons, I wasn't able to say the shiur in the Rova, so we're going to make it up right here. What I intend to do, is show the awesome meaning of words in Tanakh. A word can tell an entire story, a story that we may otherwise not have seen, and the Mefarshim and others are able to focus in on the word and tell us the story. There are particular kinds of stories that I want to tell today. I want to paint a picture of a number of the great characters in this week's Sedra. I want, if possible, that we should be able to take a look at them, a real look at them. What's going on in their neshama, and maybe more than anything else, their conduct. The unusual conduct of an Avraham, a Sarah, a Rivka. Remember, Parashat Chaye Sarah is the changing of the God. Sarah and Avraham depart this world in Parashat Chaye Sarah, and it's Yitzchak and Rivka that are to whom the torch is passed. Chaye Sarah is sort of the bridge between generation one and generation two. And it's extremely important to see how it moves from one generation to the next. It's also important to see how a wife is chosen for Yitzchak, what it is that they want. What are they looking for? It may seem very extreme, but all right. I'm giving you a general idea of the direction in which I want to go. Let's begin by reading at the beginning of the Sedra. Vayiyu chayei Sarah Mea shana, ve'esrim shana, ve'sheva shanim, shnei chayei Sarah. The years of Sarah were 100 years, 20 years, 7 years. I would assume that that's it. That adds up to 127. Of course, the Medrash, the Farsh and Rashi, everybody's concerned, why does it have to say shana? Why does it have to say 100 years, 20 years, 7 years? It could have said just once, 127 years. Shana could have been said once. Why does it say this way? So Rashi says three words that most probably should shake us all. Rashi says, An shnei chayei Sarah, the years of the life of Sarah, Kulan Shavin Litova. They were all equally good. What could that possibly mean? Aren't we talking about a woman who more than anything else wanted a child? She suffered a whole lifetime until finally, when she does hear the word of God that she's going to have a child, she laughs. There wasn't pain, there wasn't suffering, her faith was not tested time and time again. Taken to the house of Paro, taken to the house of Avimelech, wandering with her husband from Padan Aram, Aram Naharaim, the way to Eretz Yisrael. Harken you say, Kulan Shavin Litova, all equally good. Unless, of course, we take another medrash. The medrash says that when they were told that they were going to have a child, so Sarah turned to Avram and she said, "Ata b'haftacha v'ani be'emuna." To whom had God originally said it? By the Brit Bein Avtachim, Pashat Lech Lecha. He had told Avram, "Lechol zaracha." To you and your children I will give this land. this was a haftacha, a promise, a guarantee, a commitment that was made by God. Sarah turns to Avram and she says, Atov haftacha, you live with a promise that was made to you by the Rebbeinu Shimon himself. Vani, but I live be'emuna, with faith. We're talking about tremendous, tremendous faith, which means the following. The only way in which it's possible to understand Kulon, Shovin, Letova, all of them were equally good, means that in distinction to all of us, we have ups and downs in life. I think that we can say that about all of us, Kulanum. We have our ups and our downs. We have moments at which our faith is shaken, our faith in ourselves is teared or torn away from its moorings. I mean, this is, we sort of look at it as life is just a series of ups and downs. We hope that the ups will last long, and we hope that the downs will pass quickly. We hope that the ups will be real up, the downs won't be that far down. To be able to maintain a sense of inner equilibrium and balance through all of the difficult times, this is the hallmark of Sarah. I don't think that we are capable of even understanding what the Medrash is saying. Kulon Shovin Litova. Of course there were trying times. Of course there were times of sadness and times of joy. But she was able to maintain an inner strength throughout. There was no faltering in her faith, in her determination. Megeit Vaita. That's the Litova about it. Nobody is saying that certainly Rashi doesn't mean that for Sarah life was just plain one bowl of cherries. From day one until the end, it was just all partying and happiness. Kulon Shovin Litova means the ability to stand up, the ability to maintain oneself and one's presence of mind and one's equilibrium in times of crisis, in the ups and downs of life, to be able to roll with the punches, the ability to, be knocked down and then stand up again. Get up again. And as, what can I do? I can't help one of my great heroes, I'm afraid to say it now, one of my great heroes was Richard Nixon. Who said when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Sarah had a tremendous strength of faith. And even at the moments that she suffered and suffered terribly, and we know that she suffered terribly, but she was able to maintain her strength and her dignity. And that means that those are good years. God never promised everybody in this life a bowl of cherries. Never promised us a rose garden. The question is, what do we do? What was it? What if you get a lemon? Who said that once? Was that Irma Brombeck, huh? If you get a lemon, you make lemonade. You understand? If you're thrown a curve in life, so then you have to learn what to do with that curve in life. If the suffering and if the challenges of life are utilized by man in order to grow, then ultimately it means that suffering, bad as it was while one was going through it, it was litova. It was for good. Who can make it for good? We're the ones that can make it for good. Like, I'm sure the question has been asked all along, like, well, what's going on the last 2 years? What's going on the last 2 weeks? What does the Rebbeinu Shem have in mind? What good will come of this? What does he have in mind at the end of this painful, painful process of suffering of Klal Yisrael? What does he want? What does he want from us? What does he plan? We all want to know what the end game is going to be, but we're not going to know what it is. So what it really all depends on is what are we going to do with the suffering? If we're just going to suffer and we're going to say, poor me, no. But if somehow or other we grow from the suffering, remember this is a theme that we began 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, when we talked about the Brisbane Absovim that Klal Yisrael ultimately must go down to Mitzrayim, because only in the crucible of Mitzrayim are they going to be formed and shaped and forged into a great people. Shalosh Matanas Tovas Nosan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, three great gifts that God gave to the Jewish people, the Kulam Lo Nitnu El Al Yedei Yisurim, and all of them were given only through suffering. And they are Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. And we talked then about the fact that you can only acquire something through suffering, and the only thing that's meaningful is that which is acquired through suffering. So when Rashi says over here about the years of Sora, 100 years, 20 years, 7 years, why is the term years repeated? In order to tell us Kulam Shavin Latova, all were equally good. Doesn't mean that they were good. What it means is she made them good because she grew from the suffering. She took the problems and the obstacles, and she was able to rise to the challenge. She made it good. No such thing as saying about Sora that, what are you talking about? She danced her way through life. Didn't dance her way through life. Even her death was in a sense wrapped in tragedy, according to the Medrash, that she was told by Satan that Yitzhak had been taken to the Arkada. He couldn't even he didn't finish the end of the news to give her the good news, and Porcho Nishmos, out went her soul. But she made, let's say Latova could also mean she made the best of it. She made it as good as she possibly could. Now watch, that's just one of the brush strokes of a Sarah. Let's see Avram. Avram is most probably going through the most difficult day of his life right now. Can you imagine? It seems to me, following the Akedah, what would Avram have wanted more than anything else? I think he wanted to come home and tell it to Sarah, right? You have to have somebody to tell it to, right? There are people, and he has one person with whom he wants to share this great experience, you know? Family after a simcha, you know, you talk over the simcha till 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Who's going to want to sit and talk with you about it, right? The bar mitzvah, who wants? But yay, he was there, she was there. Did you see how he was dancing? And the main dish was really good, you know. Really good, you know. Chicken wasn't too greasy as it could be in Yerushalayim. I heard it was fine. And you know, you talk it over. The greatest experience of Avraham Avinu's life was the experience of the Arkada. So he's coming home, and more than anything else, he wants to sit down and talk with Sarah about it. And there's no Sora anymore to talk about. Can you imagine what's going through his mind? If only he would have had another few minutes. If only he could have the opportunity to talk with her. Sora! Then maybe he says to himself, I'm sure that up in heaven they are telling her exactly what happened over here. This is painful. He's going through the most difficult day of his life. Let's read a little more. I'm looking for one more word. We dealt with the word Shana, which describes Sara, Kulam Shavin Latova, all equally good. I want to see something more about the character and the personality of Avraham Avinu. Atona Sara, the Kiryat Arba, he Hebron, and Sara died in Kiryat Arba, which is Hebron, the Eretz Canaan, the land of Canaan, by Yavro Avraham, Lispod, Lisarav, Lifkotar, and Avraham came to eulogize Sarah and to cry over her. Vayakam Avraham me'al pnei meto, and Avraham got up from upon his dead. Vayadaber b'nei chet le'mor, and he spoke to the children of chet, so saying. What's really going to happen over here is a classic Middle East, I was going to say negotiation, but I think bargaining. Bargaining is going to take place over here. He must be going through an incredibly difficult moment in his life. Incredibly difficult. Not only does he have the difficulty of having lost his partner, and she was a real partner, she identified fully with everything that he stood for. The first time we hear about her, all the way back there at the beginning of Lech Lecha, so we know that in Aram Naharayim, in Ur Kasdim, Avraham Megayer et HaAnashim, V'Sora Megayeret et HaNashim. Avraham was the one who brought the message of a one invisible God to the men, and Sarah was the one who brought it to the women. She has a following. We know, of course, that she was an unusually beautiful woman. Beautiful inside, beautiful outside. We know all this about her. I mean, the loss of woman. And listen, how many years have they been married? I don't know how old she was. I mean, we were talking about 100 years they were married. And here at the end, they finally have a child. And they've been through difficult times. The two of them went through extremely, extremely difficult times. And here, he doesn't even have a place where to bury her. He doesn't have a place where to bury her in a land that has been promised to him. God already four times, five times, six times, he's told him, L'cho etein et ha'aretz hazot, l'cho ulezarecha achrecha etein et ha'aretz hazot. Here at the very end of the Akedah, he's also told, V'yirach zarecha et shar oivav, your children will inherit the gates of their enemies. He doesn't even have a place where he can bury Sarah in a land that's been promised to him. And Chazal tell us, of course, that this is of great merit to Avraham. He does not question or doubt God for a moment. If anything, he most probably sees in the negotiation now to buy this first piece of land in Eretz Yisrael, you know what he sees? This is the fulfillment. That's how God wants it to be done. How do you think God expects it to be done? Does God expect that, it's just going to come down as a gift without any effort on my part? He gives me a gift, but I have to go out there and get it. If anything, it takes great courage and great faith and great belief to be able to go through all of these negotiations without even for a moment thinking, Rabbeinu Shalom, why can't you make it a little easier for me? Your promise, why don't you just keep your promise? He most probably sees in the negotiations themselves, he sees the fulfillment of the promise. So he says, I am a stranger and a resident with you. Please give me a kever for a grave, for an inheritance, imachem with you, ve'egbram etim milfonai, and I will bury my dead from before me. Of course, the two words ger v'toshav coming together are two fascinating words. They both stand in contradiction of one another. I'm not going to go into this, at least to just if we're talking about words that are part of the greater portrait of Avraham Avinu. Ger v'toshav, these two words with which he opens by saying, I'm a stranger and I'm a dweller. Are you a stranger or are you a dweller? What are you? Was bista? Bista ger or the bista toshav? How can you be both? I believe the Rav speaks about this in a number of places, that what Avraham is here expressing by these two words, ger v'toshav, he is expressing the Jewish condition throughout all of history. The Jew is the eternal outsider. Wherever he may be, he is the outsider. And if he begins to make the mistake of thinking that he's really an insider and really part of the family of nations who's been fully accepted, that he's making a terrible mistake and it can be extremely, extremely dangerous. The Jew always has to be on God. He has to understand always that he is the eternal Ger, the outsider, wherever he is. By the same token, he is also a Toshav. He is a Toshav, meaning a resident. The Jew, wherever he has been, has become part and parcel of society. Jews have contributed in every area of human endeavor, in science, in math, in the arts, in philosophy, in technology, in politics. Jews have always been the Toshav. Always got in there, the first generation, the second generation, they all became major contributors to the societies and the civilizations and the countries in which they lived. But they still have to remember that after all is said and done, they can contribute to a great nation for hundreds of years, and there's still a bunch of Haimies from Haimietown. They're a large segment of the population that's going to look at them as the strangers. But more than that, what Avram is saying is he chooses to see himself as a ger. Avram is not saying this by virtue of the fact that he's being attacked by anybody or he's suffering from anti-Semitism. What Avram is saying is that should be the Jewish condition. We always have to realize we are part of society, and we are apart. We are together, yet we are alone. We maintain our own identity regardless of to what extent the nations of the world want to embrace us. They may all come to Yerushalayim, and if we think that this is the great bear hug of a whole world just having fallen madly in love with us, then we're making a terrible, terrible mistake. We have to know that we're separate, we're distinct, and that's the way we always have to be, and ultimately that's exactly the way they're going to look at us. Sometimes we may have to pay too high of a price to be accepted by the world. The price that we pay, yes. I don't know. Isn't it always after a great tragedy befalls us that we become the darlings of the world? We have to be very careful. Is it possible after we make great sacrifices that we become the darlings of the world? I don't think that it was worth it. Was it worth the Shoah to become for just a few years the darlings of the world? It wasn't worth it. So we have to be careful. We have to know that the specific and unique condition of the Jew is summed up in the two words of Avraham Avinu. The two dimensions of the Jew that live side by side, they're contradictory, but that's how the Jewish identity is maintained. We are both Ger and Toshav, wherever we are, whenever. But that's not really the word that I wanted to talk about. The word that I really wanted to talk about was in the pasuk before, Vayokam Avraham Me'al Pnei Meitav. And Avraham got up from upon his dead. Vayadabel b'nei chet lemor. And he speaks to the children of Ches. The real question is, Vayokam. He got up. We have to realize that, and this has been a recurring theme here in Shiurim, Torah never uses a word that is unnecessary. Certainly not a phrase. What would have been wrong if the pasuk simply would have said, "Vayedaber el bnei chet lemor"? He said to the children of Chet, "So say, finish." Why do we need this vayokam? Vayokam. So one of the great balei musar of the generation before the Shoah, the great Mashgiach of Mir, Rabbi Yeruchim said the following. I'm going to read one paragraph of what he said and translate. Vayakam, Avraham kam umacha et dimotav. Avraham got up and he wiped away his tears. He has to stand now and speak before, he has to talk with people. Because of his feeling for the dignity of the human beings with whom he's going to talk, he wiped away his tears, rachatzet panav, he most probably washed his face, v'tzaro bikirbo taman. He took all of the pain and he hid it within himself. Hine, behold, acharei rov bichyotav. He must have cried terribly. This is his great loss, his partner in life. Heisir me'olav kol dimotav, he removed all tears. Ve'en kvodom sheyidabe v'dimotav al panav. It's not in keeping with a sense of respect for the honor and dignity of human beings that he should talk with them while the tears are running down his face. Ela shalat u'mashal al atzmo v'dikshotav. He ruled, he controlled all of his feelings. Dibeditam, he spoke with them, upanav masbirot, and his face had a smile. Zehu kvod habriot, that is honor for human beings. Avram feels that he does not have to bring his pain into the public arena. He doesn't feel that as he talks to the Bnei Chet, he has to impose his own mourning on them. Let their lives continue as they are. I am here in order to negotiate with them. I have to maintain my sense of respect for the dignity of human beings with whom I'm talking. How difficult this is. I mean, it's frightening. It's frightening to think how difficult this is. We are usually the kind of people that whatever is going on inside of us, it's written all over our faces. The boss who comes in the morning barking at his workers, you know he must have had a fight with his wife before he left. Or, you know, something's eating him, something's bothering him. We have a tremendous amount of difficulty in sort of controlling our feelings. It doesn't mean doing away with them. But the ability to understand, listen, I am not going to make the atmosphere in the room difficult or heavy or painful for others. As Kutzenisht, they don't have to suffer because of my suffering. They're not members of my family. They are not my close friends. I'm here to negotiate with them. So what we have to imagine is that in that word, vayakom, that the Torah writes, he gets up. What the Torah is really describing is a tremendous act of self-control. Avram just tells himself, this is it. I am now going to negotiate with people. These people with whom I come in contact don't have to suffer because I am in mourning. If he's going to let all of his feelings come out during the course of this of these negotiations, then he is in a sense not dealing with them the respect as human beings that is their due. Very difficult to be like Avraham Avinu. Very difficult. We're talking about self-control of tremendous proportions. We're talking about a sense of understanding and feeling how somebody else is going to feel. I don't know about you. We had an experience a few days ago for about an hour mistakenly, an hour or 2 hours mistakenly. We thought that we were unwelcome in somebody's presence. Turned out later it was a terrible, terrible mistake. I remember my wife said to me that, you know, let's just remember how we felt during the course of this hour or so and make it our business never ever to make anybody feel unwanted or unwelcome, though that's really not what happened to us, but we misunderstood. And if we can misunderstand, I think other people can also misunderstand. We're talking about being sensitive to the feelings of other people. I think that what may very well have brought me onto this is that we're a country now that somebody else's feelings. What are you talking about? We're a country at each other's necks now, like we never have been, and maybe we have to take an extreme, I'm afraid to use that word, a look at the extreme goodness of an Avram and a Sarah, and we're going to get to a Rivka. This Rivka is an extremist. I'm not ready for Rivka yet. We're going to come to Rivka in a few minutes. There's something really wrong with her. Let's learn another few psukim, so we'll... I'm just giving you brush strokes. We have a brush stroke of Sora, Kulam Shavalatova. She is able to maintain her dignity and able to maintain her faith, regardless of how much it's being tested and tried. Avram is able to set aside his own extreme pain. He's able to set it aside, and he's now in the presence of people. He has to control himself. So anyway, he tells them, and also we've learned about Avram, how he views society and civilization all around him. Those two words, Ger V'Toshav, Ger V'Toshav. So how many words have we used so far? Shana for Sarah, Vayakam for Avram, and Ger V'Toshav. But watch, I want to show you something else. Something else about Avram. And not by virtue of something that he says, but something that he doesn't say. How many times have I said that there's so much to learn by that which is not written? The only problem, of course, with learning something from that which is not written is you have to find what is it that isn't written. That always isn't too simple. Vayanu b'nei chetat Avram leimor lo, the sons of chet answered Avram, saying to him, Shmoenu Adoni, listen to us, my master, Nesi Elokim ata b'tochenu, you are a prince of God in our midst. And you should know that that's extremely important. This Avram was the antithesis of everything b'nei chet stood for. Yet they respected him with an adoration that was unmatched and unparalleled. They referred to him as a prince of God, a God whom they refused to accept. These are idolaters, they're pagans and they're heathens. Yet they respect this Avram, my master, Nesi Elokim ata b'tochenu, you are the prince of God in our midst. In the very chosen, the best of grave sites, bury your dead. No one here is going to withhold his burial place from you. Avram gets up again. Here the Vayakam represents the fact that this Nasi Elohim, this prince of God, bows and prostrates himself before these very simple, plain, and common people. An expression of his gratitude. The second Vayakam is talking about gratitude. Vayadabed itam leimor, and he spoke to them, saying, Yeshet nafshichem likvaret meitim ulfanai. If you really want that I should bury my dead from before me, Shmo'uni, listen to me, you figuli Ephron ben Tzocha, please ask of Ephron the son of Tzocha. Ve'itam li et marat ha-machpelah ha-shalo, that he should give me the marat ha-machpelah that belongs to Mashebik Tzei Sodeyu, that's at the end of his field. Be'kesef maleyit nenoli, betochechem la'achuzakeva. Full payment in full, he should give this to me as an inheritance. Ephron Yoshe betoch b'nei chet, Ephron sat amongst the sons of chet, Vayan Ephron achiti et Avram, be'ozneim dei chet, and Ephron Achiti answers Avram in the ears of the sons of Chet, in the presence of all who are in the gate, saying, Lo Adoni, know my master, Shema'eni, listen to me, Hasaden Osati Lecha, I've given you the field, the Hama'ora, and the cave that's in it, I've given it all to you, Nisati Lecha, okay, V'amora Shabar Lecha, Nisati Aleinik B'neyami, Nisati Lech Givar Meitecha. Again he bows down before them. And he insists, no, I want to pay. And Ephron answers Avram, saying, Adoni, my master, Shoreini, listen to me. So it's only worth 400 kesef. Anyway, he pays him the 400 kesef. Three times at least, they have referred to Avram as Adoni, my master. It would seem, it would seem as though this is the in thing. This is the way you talk to somebody. You know, His Excellency, Your Highness. One term that Avraham does not use in this entire dialogue of negotiation is Adoni. Adoni, my master. The Gemara says, Avraham Avinu was the first one to refer to God as master of the world. Avraham will never use that word to describe anybody else. He will not speak to the B'nai Chet and refer to them as Adoni. He will bow before them, he will bend before them. But there's one word that he saves for God and God alone, which means even in all of the all of his sense, his overwhelming sense of kvod habriyot, the dignity of the individuals before he is speaking, his being overcome with their importance and their significance and the extent to which he needs them, it does not move into the area of his belief. His beliefs remain untainted, unspoiled, untouched. That he will not do. He will not refer to them as Adoni. Alright? Another brushstroke. Let's now move to look at our claim made Allah. I want to take a look at Rivka. Another stroke of the brush that comes later on in the parasha. Let's go to Shlishi, chapter 24, pasuk 10. Chapter 24, pasuk 10. And by the way, I want to learn about Rivka. Not only so that we should know what Rivka is like, I'm learning about Rivka in order that we should see more clearly what Avraham Avinu was like. We have to sort of return to being careful about our conduct and by seeing it through the conduct of the others. Avraham Avinu has told his servant Eliezer, time has come, we have to get a wife for Yitzchak. Now he has made it very, very clear, under no circumstances are you to take a wife for him from the Canaanite amongst whom I live? Not from here. Number two, no, we don't want a local girl. That's number one. Number two, my son cannot leave Eretz Yisrael. So therefore you're the one that's going to have to go find the girlfriend. Of course there's the famous question that's asked and the famous answer of the Drashot Haran. Famous question is, well, and the house of Lavan and Besuel, you understand, this is something to write home about, like where they're going to get this maid Allah. Here in Eretz Canaan, there are a bunch of idolaters and pagans and heathens, and there they're pagans and heathens and idolaters. Was war größer Glück auf dem Betroffen? Do I have to translate that? No, good. Like, big deal, he's going to get a girl for... Yitzchak, he's going to get a girl for Yitzchak in Ur Kasdim. What's so special about Ur Kasdim? So it is the Ran, one of the Rishonim, who says the following. There's a difference between personality and character on one side and belief and creed on the other. Personality and character becomes part of the genes, part of the neshama, that is transmitted from parents to children, and from those children to their children. Character and personality, people are a chip off the old block. As far as beliefs are concerned, intellect, the decisions of the mind, this is not something that is transmitted in the genes. You can have a father in Eved Avodah Zarah and a son who is a great tzaddik. Proof, Avraham. Avraham's father was not only Terach. I mean, Terach is sort of an expletive. A Terach he was. He was an idolater. Yet it does not mean that this is transmitted to the next generation. But character and personality and conduct, whether people are generous or stingy, angry people or pleasant people, all of the character and personality traits are transmitted from generation to generation. And one thing Avraham knows, good midos, good character, his family has. They're oivde avede zara, so there we'll do a job on whoever the girl might be. We'll do something. We'll do something. I don't know how to respond to that. Is that necessarily good that she's one of us? I mean, she's part of the family. All right, in a sense, I may even agree with you. I'm not sure. But let's see. Let's take a look at the... what is it that's so special about Rivka? And therefore, why is she suited to the house of Avram? So let's see what it says. Vayikach Oeved Asara Gemalim. The servant took 10 camels, Migmalei Adonav, from the camels of his master, Vayelech, and he went, V'chol Tuv Adonav V'yado, and all the good of his master was in his hands. Vayokom Vayelech Alaram Na'arayim Elir Nachar. You want a shtickel brushstroke of Eliezer? Vayokom. You think that the Vayokom of Avram was meaningful? The Vayokom of Eliezer is meaningful. Chazal tell us that he had a daughter. And what did he really want more than anything else? That he should become not only the servant of Avram, but he should be his mechitten. Can you imagine? He knew Yitzchak better than anybody else. Can you imagine what it would have meant for him that Yitzchak should be his son-in-law? I think he would have given his right arm for that, you understand? Or 10 camels, anything. He would have given for that. And he is now sent to find the wife for Yitzchak. Do you know how difficult this is for him? But at the same time that he has difficulty with that, he is the servant of Avram. And as the servant of Avram, the man to whom he has dedicated his life, he's going to pull himself together. And he's going to do something that is difficult for him to do, but he's going to give it his very best. He's going to put all of his energies, his talents, his intellect, his mind, his shrewdness to the point of conniving, and great faith. And he's going to use all of those talents in order to find the best wife possible for Yitzchak. That's what he's going to do. It takes tremendous strength. Tremendous character. It's a vayokum. Just like the vayokum at the beginning, we're talking about the great strength of an Avraham Avinu who has to wipe away the tears, wash his face, hide the pain, and get up and talk to the sons of Chet and talk to them with a shmeichel upon him. He shouldn't bring all of his own pain into that room with them. He has to set aside all of his personal feelings in the best interest of his master. Vayavrecha gemalo michutze. Vayelech, he went already to El Aram Naharayim, El Ir Nachar, to the city of Nachar. Vayavrecha gemalo michutze Ir El Ber Amayim. And he put he brought the camels down. Camels go down upon their knees. They went down upon their knees by the well of water, Le'et Erev, at evening time, Le'et Tzeit HaShavavot, when the water fetcherinins, I imagine, the female fetchers of water go out. And he said, Hashem Elokei Adoni Avram, the God of my master Avraham, Hakrein Olfanai Hayom Vasei Chesedim Adoni Avram, I want you to make it happen and today and do kindness with my master Avram. Hine Anochi Nitzav Alein Amayim, behold, I'm standing by the well of water. Upinot Anshei Leir Yotzot L'Shof Mayim, and the daughters of the people of the city are going out to fetch water. And it will come to pass, the girl to whom I will say, Hatino Kadech Ve'eshte, incline, sort of bend over your pitcher, and I will drink. Va'amra, and she will say to me, Shtei, drink. Ve'gam gemalecho ashke, and also your camels I will give to drink. Otahu chachto la'avdecho liYitzchak, she is the one whom you've pointed out for your servant Yitzchak. That's how I will know, ki asita chesed em adoni, that you have done kindness with my master. Vayehi hu terem kila ladaber, and it came to pass he hadn't finished speaking yet. Vehine, and behold, Rivka yotzeit, ashi yuldalu betuel ben Milka. Rivka comes out, who was born to Betuel, the son of Milka. Eshet Nocha, the wife of Nocha. Achi Avram, Nocha was the brother of Avram. It's the Mishpucha. He doesn't know this. Vechado al shichma, and she has her pitcher upon her shoulder. Vahanara Tovas Madam Yod, she's very beautiful. Betula Vishlo Yada, virgin, no man had known her. Vatedat Haino, she went down to the well. Vatumale Kado, she filled up her pitcher. Vatol, she brought it up. Vayora Tzavel, the servant ran toward her. Vayomini said, Hagmini no matmaimi kadech, please give me a little bit of water from your pitcher. Vatoma, she said, Shtei Adoni, drink my master. Vatimahir, and she hurried, Vatodet Kado al Yodah Vatashkeu, she sent down the pitcher again, and she gave him to drink. Vatachal Hashkoto, she finished giving him to drink. Vatoma, and she said, Gamle Gamalecha Yashav, I'm also going to fetch water for your camels. Ad in Kilu Lishtot, until they finish drinking. Vatamar, she hurries. Vatar Kado Lashoket, and she pours the water back. Vatoret Zoch, she's running. According to the Medrash, she's either 3 years old or she's 14 years old. Let's make it a little easier. She's 14. Okay, she's 14. Now, she's 14. 10 camels. And 10 gezinte shtick together with Eliezer. Eliezer came with slaves. I mean, this must be a bunch of burly, strong guys who are camel drivers. To give a camel to drink... I saw somebody who wrote in a sefer by Rav Nevensal of the Rava. He writes that he had a brother in the army, and he was stationed down in the Negev. And it seems, like you give a cat to drink milk once, the cat's going to come back. Except camel came once to their army base. That's right.
The camel. The ship of the desert.
It drinks once a day, but drinks tremendous amount of water. And this girl, you understand, it's evening time. She doesn't have much time. And she undertakes to give them all to drink. You can't imagine the amount of effort and energy. It doesn't occur to her for a minute to say, Eliezer, you have a bunch of gezinte chevra over there. Why don't you help me out? No, they're all standing. They're all standing around, and nobody offers to help. I know. One of the things that I've learned: if you have a white beard and you don't know how to change a flat tire, there's always somebody who's gonna change the tire for you. I've been making my way through life for 20 years already. But at least I always feel that, I say, any way I can help, Rabbi, just stay on the side. Don't get involved. Okay. Over here, nobody offers to help this little Maidala. The little Maidala is doing something that most probably can be described in only one way. It's absolutely irrational chesed. Absolutely irrational chesed, illogical kindness. It makes absolutely no sense. What are you talking about? Why should she have to undertake to do this? Why should she offer? And even if she offers, she does it. I don't know how many hours she has to work in order to be able to give those 10 camels to drink. And nobody, she doesn't ask anybody. Nobody offers. They're all just standing around. They're not twiddling their thumbs, by the way. I think that they're standing there in absolute amazement. It simply is illogical. It makes absolutely no sense. It defies our ability to describe it in rational, logical, normal human terms. I don't know, they say that an Edim is a shtik shver. Is that what they say in Yiddish?
Yes.
A son-in-law is... like a father-in-law, like that. I'm telling you something else. A daughter-in-law is a shtick shver. All I have to do is remind you. I just want to remind you from the beginning of Parashat Vayecha. Avram Avinu is 99 years old. He has just undergone Brit Mila. He is not well. And because he's not well, God himself comes, Levaker Sachola, to visit the sick. If we're using Yiddish already, I remember when it was a hot day, that the Stellerl von Himmel brennt, the sky is burning. Rashi says at the beginning of Parshat Vayeda, Hotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chama Min Artika, God took the sun out of its orbit, that it should be a burning hot day, so that there shouldn't be people on the road, so that Avram would not be troubled by any guests. I don't know, what do you know? By us, if it's 32, 33 degrees Celsius, you understand, only tourists walk in the street. Right? What do? We hide at home and wait until it cools off in the middle of the day, Mommy, only tourists, because, you know, and like I asked them, Sugar, what are you doing out? What are you talking about? It's summer. Why do you always walk out in summer? So I said, yeah, and in middle of the winter, and stand in January or February, when it's 25 degrees below zero, you're going to go walking out for a spazier in the middle of, I will use Toronto for this. Everybody hides at home. A 99-year-old man who is ill. So take it easy at home until you recover. The Rebbein Shem sees that the man is in pain, that he doesn't have a guest. Who's going to walk out in that heat? The only one the Rebbein Shem can get to walk out in that heat are Malachim. Only angels, where human beings fear to tread, only angels are going to walk in the street. So the Rebbein Shem, whom it gayes, he calls up the reserves, three Malachim who are going to walk through the street. So at least if Avram would have said Eliezer, and most probably he did say, he must have told Eliezer, go out, look and see, maybe there's some guests someplace. Eliezer must have come back every few minutes and say, Adoni, my master, there are no guests out there. You know, I have a feeling that at one moment in the middle of this brutally hot day, Avram doesn't even trust his servant Eliezer. He says, Eliezer, don't take it personally, I'm going to check for myself. And he hobbles to the door and he looks out, and do you know what he sees? Three people are coming. Do I have to describe how the Torah tells us what happens? He hurries and he runs, and akunt on a gate, on a mach, hurrying and running, and it's totally illogical. It's absolutely illogical. It staggers the imagination. You read the beginning of Parashat Vayera, the same words that are used to describe Rivka at the well, the same words are used over here. Yukach nomad mayim, all that he offers is, you know, a little bit of water. Wash your feet, lean, sit back under the tree. I'm going to get a little bread. A little bread, that's all. Just a little bread for you, and then you can leave. And they said, okay, then, while they're not looking, Vayimar Avram hurries to the tent of Sarah, and he says to her, Mari, hurry, Shloshim Kemach Solus Velushi Vasiugot, Ve'el HaBokar Rotz Avram. 99 years old, 3 days after Bris Milah, V'loista V'geista. If you look at the parasha clearly, do you know what you're seeing? You see before yourself absolutely illogical, irrational act of kindness. It simply staggers the imagination. Normal human being couldn't really appreciate or understand it. I always say that our problem with learning Chumash is that we learned it when we were children, and you know, we sort of take it for granted already. You know, of course, three people walking along, Avram goes and he does this and he does that. Yet you have to imagine it. When you imagine it, it simply is incomprehensible. If the chesed of Avram is incomprehensible, then you know precisely why Eliezer. You understand precisely why Eliezer, when he makes this test, when he makes the test to decide who is going to be the girl that Yitzchak will marry, do you know what he wants? He wants a girl whose chesed is as illogical, as crazy, as mad, as the Shveh, as what he's seen in the house of his master. Why does Avram indeed act like this? Why do Avram and Rivka act in that manner? In other words, what they've done here is, it's illogical. It doesn't make sense. I once said a number of years ago, and I'm not going to go through that again, but I just described that Avram, as the Rambam describes him, Avram, as described by the Rambam, is the giant of intellect. An entire world believes in idols, and as a young man, a child, Avram begins to question the fundamental principles upon which all of society and civilization rests. It takes tremendous intellectual courage and creativity to stop and say, wait, this doesn't make sense for me. He studies, he meditates, he ponders, he works until at age 40, you understand. Can you imagine how much thought, how much intellectual energy Avram has put into this? At age 40, he arrives at a decision, there is a God, and he is so certain of his intellectual decision that he's ready to take on the whole world. So he is the great genius, the man with the unusual mind. I had then described, and this is on tape, first series, Parashat Vayera, that Avraham has to undergo 10 tests. Why does Avraham have to undergo 10 tests? Asoron Nisyonot Shenitnaseh Behem Avraham Avinu. Why does Avraham have to undergo tests? So I explained that in Mamish Bekitzer. What God wants is to turn Avraham from a man of intellect into a man of faith. He has to be able to become the man of a faith. The man of faith means that he is going to, he is ready to sacrifice, or maybe make even his great intellectual mind subservient before the highest intellect of all, the Rebbeinu Shlomo. Is he only a man of mind, only rational, the great rational being, or is he ready to accept, even to the point of irrationality, he's ready to accept upon himself the God that he has discovered? All of our sorrows, Yonat, I said in that shir, all of the 10 tests that he undergoes are absolutely irrational and illogical. Any rational man would have said, no. Any rational man would have been taken aback. The wisdom tells him, leave your house and your birthplace and go to the land that I will show you. Intellectually and philosophically, this is such a difficult concept to understand. Whom did he discover? In his mind, he discovered a God who created heaven and earth. You're going to tell me that that God whom I discovered, the God of the cosmos, dwells in one little piece of real estate on the face of this earth more than any other place? This is not the God that I discovered. A God who tells him, the man, the great man of Chesed, who prays the stone, God tells him, take your one and only child and bring him as a sacrifice upon the altar. This flies in the face of everything that Avram stands for. Not only whatever, everything Avram stands for. You think it's easy to kill a human being? What are you talking about? This is the most difficult test of all. It's irrational. It's illogical. Maybe Avram should have stood up and said, Rebbeinu Shlomo, I can't. I've had it. That's it. No more. Avram is able to turn from the man of great intellect into the man of great faith. He is faithful to God, even though it may seem irrational and illogical. Avram is also the man of great goodness and kindness. And he decides that exactly what has happened with his intellect must happen with his chesed. His intellect, he has curbed his intellect and made it subservient to God, that even he is even ready to do the irrational and the illogical, because that's the will of God. In his chesed, which makes up his personality, he's also going to be irrational and illogical. Do you know why? Because he's going to be godlike. The Rebbe Shlomo created a world. Let me ask you, does everybody on the face of this earth really deserve that God should feed them and take care of them? I mean, they're good people and they're bad people. To decide which ones are the good ones and which ones are the bad ones, of course, it depends on who you talk to these days, you know. All right? The purpose of God's creation was, creation came as a result of his goodness. God's goodness had to have an outlet. He had to be able to give, to shower blessings, to share. So he created people so he should be able to give them his blessing. Are they all deserving? Are they all worthy? No. And despite that, God takes care of them all. There would be enough food in the world for everybody if only we would take care of our act. God's kindness knows no bounds. It may even seem illogical and irrational. Therefore, Avraham is also going to engage in kindness even though it's irrational. Nothing would have been wrong if he would have taken the day off, 99 years old, the third day of the Bris Milah, and of all things, the Rebbein Shalom is there visiting him. And you know what he says? Rebbein Shalom, just wait a minute. Just hold on. I'm going out to schlep these sojourners out there on the road. Let's just take it one step further. With this, we'll wrap it up. You know the frustration that I have toward the end of this year. I still have so much to say, then I'm going to try and chop it all right in 5 minutes, so it's can't do it. There's a great Meshech Chachma. At the end of the Akedah, when Avram says, Hashem Yireh, let God be seen, let God see, let God reveal himself. And the famous Medrash we spoke about a few years ago, the name of this great city. How does this great city get its name? Says the Medrash. That Avram called the name of this place Yireh, that God should be seen here. Melchizedek, who is Shem, the son of Noah, called the name of this city Shalem. So God said, if I'm going to call the name of the place Yireh as Avram did, so Shem is going to be upset. If I'm going to call the name of the city Shalem as Shem did, so Avram, who's a tzaddik, is going to be upset. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call the name of the city a composite of the two. Yireh Shalem, Yerushalayim. I'm not going to go into how Yireh Shalem becomes Yerushalayim. Save that for another time. Says Reb Meir Simcha the following. Why was it that Shem called the name of the city Shalem, and Avram called the name of the city Yireh? So he says, Shem and Avram were faced with different challenges, and each one dealt with the challenge of his time. Shem's challenge was, he lived in a society that had become a violent one. A society that had begun to decay fully. Mala ha'aretz chamas, the world was full of violence. Ki hishchit kol basar et darko, all flesh had already become depraved upon the face of this earth. Comes the Mabul. What's Shem's job? Shem's job is to rebuild the character and personality of a world that has deteriorated. And because it deteriorated, God destined that it disappear from the face of this earth, and he's going to start all over again. Because character and personality had become so bad, it was impossible to live on the face of this earth. Had to start all over again. Shem spent a year in close quarters with all of the creatures upon the face of this earth. What he had to learn then was love, not only for fellow human beings, but love for every creature, because it's God's creature. He worked on the development of character and personality, and therefore he saw the purpose of this city to send a message out there to the world sometime in history of Shalem, being a complete and a healthy human being in terms of character and personality. Avram faced a different challenge. Avram faced the intellectual challenge of a world gone crazy in their belief in in idols, pagan and heathen conduct. He had to bring people back to proper thinking. He wanted them to know that there is a God and that they should be able to see God. Therefore, he called the name of the place Hashem Yireh, let God be seen. Avram spoke to mind and Shem to heart. Shem dealt with the personality, and it was Avram who dealt with the creed, with the belief of man, with dogma. Therefore, the Yerushalayim, maybe why, the truth is that Shem called it Shalem. Why do we say Yerushalayim? I once told you, what does an ayim ending always mean? In Hebrew, ayim is plural. Yad, yadayim, regel, raglayim, ayin einayim, ozen oznayim. Yerushalayim is a duality, it's two. First of all, the name is made up of two parts, given by two people, Shem and Avram. And it means also that two messages go forth, Ki Mitzion Teitze Torah Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim, both personality and creed, belief and conduct. These are the two ideas represented by Shem and Avraham. But there's something that God adds into this name. It always bothered me, why did God call it Yerushalayim? He gives Avram's name first and Shem's name second. Now, I know what you're going to tell me. Shlem Yeru just doesn't sound the same. I know that you're going to tell me, but you know, of course, that that's silly. All we need is a week and we'd be talking about Shlem Yeru Ir HaKodesh. There's no problem whatsoever. No problem whatsoever. But when God chose to give the name of this city Yerushalayim, you know what he was saying? That in the ultimate analysis, character and personality can be developed and will remain good only if there's belief in God. Only the one who can see God. And I don't care what anybody's going to tell you out there otherwise. Ultimate beauty and perfection of character and personality can only come as the result of seeing God, knowing that there's a God. Otherwise, there may be good character and personality for one generation, two generations. It may be in the last three or four. But in the final analysis, without a rooted foundation in a belief in a God, there will not be character and personality. And I don't care what anybody out there is going to say. Therefore, the Revelation gives the name of this city, not Shlem Yeru, because Shlemut cannot come unless there is Yirat Hashem before. Avraham Avinu said, Ein Yirat Hashem, Ein Yirat, there's no Yirat Elokim b'makom hazeh. So you know what Avraham Avinu did now? Avraham Avinu saw that Shem had worked on character and personality, and that's why he sent Eliezer back to the city of Haran in order to find a wife for Yitzchak, because they were the children of Shem. Those who were in Canaan were the children of Ham. Who was the one that worked on character and personality? Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem, who is Shem the son of Lo. He runs from the children of Shem, because by the children of Shem there are those who have personality. There are those who have good character. There are those who have midas tovos. But Avram went one step further. Just as he became the pillar of intellect and mind, and then from rational man, he became the lonely man of faith, the one who saw that faith stands even higher than the rational mind. And therefore he is ready, and he's ready to do even the what is seemingly irrational and illogical in his service of God. So he believes that even in the area of character and personality, you have to be irrational and illogical. Could we therefore say that what Avraham Avinu really stands for, something that's been quoted so often, it has never been put to the test as it is today. I don't even know how to do it. But, you know, in a flippant manner, we sort of always said this. Rav Kook, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, said, Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, and therefore the only way that it's going to be rebuilt is Ahavas Chinam. Ahavas Chinam is not only difficult, it may even be a little bit irrational or illogical. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it. But maybe in the final analysis, Rav Kook was absolutely right. Avraham's intellect goes, and I'm not going to use any more the word irrational or illogical, goes beyond the rational, beyond the logical. His chesed, his kindness, goes beyond the rational, beyond the logical. And therefore, that's our Gitta Zivig. Rivka fits perfectly into the family. She's doing something that's so meshuggah. She's meshuggah good. That's why she's part of the family. Okay. Miriam Knech just has said, I'm going to say it for you, the face is Bereshut HaRabim and the lev is Bereshut HaYachid. The face is that which man shows to the world, but the heart is that which is in himself. What we have in our heart, we don't necessarily have to show out to everybody out there. That's what you meant, Miriam? Tov miyod. You'll pass the course. You haven't been here that often, but it's good to have you. Yes, Shoshana? Oh, very good. How do you remember that?
I wrote down
that shir appears on tape. That's one of my better ones. You're frightening. Please don't become a member of my shul. They remember things that I said 10 years ago. You remember 20 years ago. Sun Valley, by the way, is a bungalow colony in Monticello. Your best friends you made in bungalow colonies. You understand? You ran away from the city and you went up. You're right. Zekeli van Veil, the two kinds of the two ways to reach belief, a knowledge of God through intellect and through amunah. Very good. Lo ani tchilas hakadusha lemuchzeket omedet li kedusha tova lakotol alai miyamei avotai. The great Rashi, one that I always remember because it's on Zek Keli van Veil lekayovi veromemenu, and that is the pasuk that my wife made certain we placed on the paroches of the Aron Kodesh in Kehilat Zichron Yosef. Zekeli, you come next time, take a look, Norma, you'll see. Zekeli van Veu le Keavi Varomimenu. Yes, it's my wife's fault that it's there.